Welcome to the AquariMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 165, recorded June 3rd, 2013. Wassalo!
Which is Tlapanik for hi.
Hi.
Or something like that.
Okay, now you got to tell them where that language is from. I can't even say it.
In a part of Mexico.
Okay. Is it an indigenous language? It's not. It's like one of the ones that was there before Spanish was there.
Yes. And there are people who still speak it, and I knew one of them. That's how I learned it.
Okay.
Okay. There you go.
Well, welcome to our show this week that will endeavor to be giggle fit free.
Or at least giggle fit reduced. How about that?
Yeah. Okay, it's been an interesting couple of weeks, is all.
Indeed.
Okay, but today we have Ryan in Arizona and Matt in Perth, Australia, and Tom in Provo.
Indeed, we do.
In Utah, yeah.
So, shall we?
We'll go to Ryan first. Mm-hmm. He says, after listening to your recent podcast on using potassium chloride as a plant supplement, I did some research and found that you can buy 20-pound bags at most places that sell home water softener salt. It is sold as an eco-friendly alternate to sodium chloride for recharging the ion exchange resin in home water softeners. This got me to thinking about Gabriel's use of Brita filters to soften water for his planted tank. Water softened with an ion exchange resin that has been recharged with potassium chloride should be much better for aquarium use since it contains elevated levels of potassium rather than sodium. An alternative to the Brita filters is API's water softening pillow, which contains an ion exchange resin. The description for the softening pillow states that it also removes iron and heavy metals. I'm guessing that this is true of most ion exchange resins, so you would probably need to add iron and other trace elements back in for use in a planted tank.
Very good point.
I haven't tested any of this myself and probably won't, as all my fish, shrimp, and snails like hard water, but this would be an interesting project for someone who is keeping soft water species in a planted tank.
Indeed, and that's a good point that you bring up. And I have done a bit of research on that, both prior to and subsequent to using the potassium chloride in my tanks, and found some similar things. And there are aquarists who are doing that, apparently, using water softener water with that they've used potassium chloride in to recharge the ion exchange resins. And it seems to be working for them. At least some of them are reporting good results with it.
That's good.
And if you have a planted tank, then you're set. You know, you don't have to dose potassium. I mean, you'd have to be careful and make sure that the potassium is in balance. But it seems, from what I can determine, potassium seems to be one of those things that's a little less... How can I say it? You can tip the balance in a bad way more easily with something like phosphate than you can with potassium, as far as I've been able to determine.
Mm-hmm.
So... Yeah, so that's a good thing to bring up, and hopefully we'll hear from some aquarists who have done so. So far, the potassium dosing I've been doing with the new salt seems to be working. I mean, nothing bad has happened so far. It's too early to really say, oh yes, it's doing all these great things, because I just haven't been doing it long enough. It's been about a week, or maybe a week and a half. But at the same time, I can say nothing bad has happened as a result of doing so.
No news is good news.
With new salt.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes.
There you go.
With new gnu. he has a PS too.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you might want to check out www.bobstropicalplants.com as a source for potassium chloride and other plant nutrients. They've also got a nice selection of inverts and fish.
And you know, I did do some preliminary checking. I think I might get myself some poor man's dosing drops. Because that's a place you can get it.
What's poor man's dosing drops?
Well, it stands for PMDD. No, backward. It's often referred to as PMDD. But poor man's dosing drops, basically, it's a cheap way of making all-in-one fertilizer for aquarium plants. Typically what happens is you buy it in a dry form, and then you mix up liquid a little bit at a time, because if you let them sit all together, all of those chemicals in liquid, you'll have problems. You won't... It's not...
Does it not last?
It's not stable.
Okay.
At least not all of the the chemicals.
So they sell it in larger amounts in powder, and that's why it's poor man's, because you just mix it up, but you can get it cheaper at the beginning?
You can get it a lot cheaper, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think, if I remember correctly, on the website, I don't want to give misinformation, but you could get like a pound of it for $10 or something, which is very cheap compared to fertilizer. You go to the pet store and get something. It's
an ounce for $10.
It's a lot more. Yeah. You get maybe 8 ounces for $6 or something. So, or it might even be, and that's not necessarily all of the fertilizers. That's one, you know, like potassium and iron. So if this is a much cheaper way to do it, and you have to be very careful about how you dose it. And there are a couple of different ways to do that. We won't really get into that this show, but we will in the future. I think it would be great to have a show that just focuses on that sometime.
Just on fertilizers?
Yeah, aquarium fertilizers and how to dose them and all that stuff.
Okay.
Get maybe an expert from...
from aquarium fertilizer world?
Yeah. Because, you know, I've messed around with fertilizers for years, but I don't consider myself an expert.
I'm sure we can find a fertilizer expert out there somewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I haven't done all the different ways to do it that there are, you know. I've kept it pretty basic. But anyway, yeah. Let's move on. And thank you, Ryan. And that's very good to bring that up. And if any of you have used water softener potassium chloride and you have any results you'd like to report, please let us know.
Okay, Matt in Perth, Australia.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "Hello, Russ and Kelly. Thank you for playing my audio clip. On audio in general, I am getting a lot of distortion when the intro music plays, and I can also hear a computer fan." Yeah, their computer's been really loud. It's geriatric, even, our computer. And it's like the old person sitting back there saying, "Nobody appreciates me.
So let us know.
I'm
gonna
make noise, you whippersnappers."
Yeah, something like that. Let us know if it's a little better this week. Mm-hmm. I tried to clean it out and see if I could get the dust from making the fan work too
hard. I think
it
sounds quieter.
So let us know if that's helped. As far as the intro music distorting, I'm gonna have to look into that and see what's going on there. But
maybe it's just too loud.
It may be. I may have to change the balance or something. Mm-hmm. But we appreciate hearing
that. But that's good to
know,
so we can fix it.
We
want to
fix that.
We don't want to break your ears.
No, and we don't want it to sound distorted.
Mm. Okie dokie. On a fishier note, he says, "I just bought some Australian rainbow fish. I forget the name, but I attached a photo of an adult from the internet. They have worked perfectly. The Mbuna rock cichlids are far more confident now, and their colors are stronger."
Cool. So it's working for him. His idea to use the Australian rainbows, which we agreed with in the last episode, is working for him already.
Good.
That's good. Yeah, we'll put that picture. He sent a nice picture of the rainbow fish up. He sent it to us. We'll put it up on the show page so people can check it out.
Okay. He says, "On to your aquatic myth busting. Here are two aquarium myths I hear a lot from other people. One, keeping fish is hard, mine keep dying, and two, a goldfish bowl is a good idea." Now, are we doing that just little bits at a time, or are we doing that as a show?
I think we can do some when people send them in, yeah.
Okay. Well, those are pretty bustable.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
In fact, especially the goldfish bowl, you should just take it out and drop it, and then it's busted.
Well, the goldfish bowls have their uses, but not for keeping fish in.
Yeah, you can, you know, put kitchen utensils in them.
Yeah, or make a nice little terrarium. I've done that. That's fun.
Or put them over your kid's head as, like, a play astronaut helmet.
And like I said, I did have a 2-gallon fish bowl with some, what were they, the mosquito fish, eastern mosquito fish in it. And they're so tiny, and you know, had a little
sponge. You can keep like Daphne in them and stuff.
Moss,
and I didn't really mean put it over your head, just in case somebody out there has a very literal self and doesn't know that I'm being sarcastic. Right. Don't go put a fishbowl over anybody's head.
I certainly agree about the goldfish, you know, not belonging in a bowl.
That's
definitely true. And the thing about mine keep dying too, that's something I'm gonna try to address in this class that I'm gonna be teaching.
Oh yes.
You know, I'm hoping to get people who are having problems like that, and I can help steer them in the right direction. So they know that, you know, new tank syndrome is a really big cause of that. People say, "Mine keep dying." I go to the pet store and I buy fish and I bring them home and they die, and then I go get some more and they die.
Ah!
They're not realizing that they're just the new
they're killing them
over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep,
those are some good ones.
Okay, well, do you want to talk about them right now?
Well, I think we kind of just did.
I don't know. We talked about
more in depth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, bust some myths.
Well,
I don't know. How far do we want to get into mine keep dying?
Well, I think that's a big cause right there.
Because you could
the new tank syndrome
do a whole, the whole rest of the show on
the ammonia cycle and everything.
Yeah.
Well, I think he's just, he's putting those out there, and I think those ones are some very widespread myths that, you know, fish are really tough to keep and they mm-hmm. just always die. They're really super sensitive. And that's true of some fish, but, you know, I think he's hit those two already. Kind of, they're more evident to aquarists already, but they're very, mm-hmm. very relevant, and we can keep mm-hmm. collecting more too.
I liked his comments afterwards. He says, I find keeping fish not hard at all, just have to pay attention. And as to goldfish bowls, they are such a stupid idea. First, because they are so small, therefore toxins can build up rapidly from uneaten fish flakes, goldfish feces, and they need frequent water changes. And two, it is difficult to clean algae off the insides.
That's true. Those are some very good points.
If goldfish are messy.
They're very.
They are messy, poopy fish.
They produce a lot of waste and need a lot of food.
Yes, and they need a lot of space.
They're quite
And
cows.
If people were only kept inside their toilet, we would die too.
Or even our bathroom.
Or even just our bathroom.
Yeah.
We would die too.
And, but you couldn't flush the toilet.
Right.
Okay, that's too much. I went too far with that one. But, okay. The, so
those are perfect.
He really got it there.
Yeah.
That's what needed to be said. Here's the thing. I think the reason why goldfish bowls got started is because in China,
mm-hmm.
they used to have earthenware bowls,
mm-hmm.
which were mostly intended to be viewed from above. But they'd have a pond outside. This is my understanding. You know, I'm not going to cite a source because I don't really have one in my head. But this is my understanding of how it worked. They'd have a pond outside, and then when they were going to view the goldfish, they would go catch a couple of the goldfish and put them into an earthenware bowl, a fairly small one,
mm-hmm.
and they'd have it indoors while they were eating dinner or whatever.
So they could look
at it. And then they'd take it back out and put it in the pond. And so that's, you know, the idea that they... And they would keep them in larger ones outside, too, not just ponds, but they'd keep them in larger ceramic containers and so on outside. But this idea that they can subsist for a long period of time in a small bowl and be healthy and happy is,
silly.
A descendant from that original idea where people weren't catching the whole picture. Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay, should we go to Tom and Provo?
Let us do that, yes. Thank you, Matt.
Okay, Tom says, Klatu barada nikto.
Which is probably one of the most intertextual science fiction quotes you could ever give.
And I don't actually know that one.
Okay. I don't know if you've seen The Day the Earth Stood Still.
I have not.
It's really been a long time since I've seen it. I can't even remember for sure if I saw the whole thing. But it's an oldie.
1952, he says.
Uh-huh. And basically it's a quote with some controversy as to its meaning, but some people think it might mean something like we need to save the Earth or something like that, or there's still time to save the Earth. We can warn the scientists or something like that.
You hoser, you drank the rest of my soda
it's,
to the other aliens in the spaceship.
It's in so many different movies now.
Really?
It was in that one, but then a lot of other movies and television shows have referenced it. There are references to it in Star Wars and references in, you know, all kinds of places.
Mark and Mindy?
The Monkees.
The Monkees? Which episode of The Monkees?
The one where Mickey was an alien.
Which one?
I don't remember.
Isn't Mickey an alien?
So, yeah, it's in lots of different shows. So, that very good quote.
Now we'll have to look out for it. Okay, so he has two questions.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, should newly obtained snails be quarantined? For how long? What should one watch for in the quarantine tank besides the snail laying motionless on the bottom with its operculum uppermost?
Well, that's That's the big one to watch for.
You know, that would be a good album name. What? Uppermost Operculum.
Right up there with Mithril Spatula.
Yeah.
Well, the snails, I guess they really should be quarantined.
Do snails carry a lot of diseases?
Snails can actually carry some really nasty parasites.
Oh.
They can be vectors for stuff like that. Not to say all of them do, and wild snails are going to be, you know, worse than the other snails. Kelly loves to give me funny looks while we're recording and make me laugh.
A la Carol Burnett?
Yeah, something like that. But the wild snails tend to be worse about carrying parasites.
They've got goo from
being
out
in
the wild,
where there are these parasite cycles, and you know so they're more likely to be infected by things. But it doesn't mean that captive snails can't ever do that, even though it's much less likely they're going to come in contact with another vector of the parasite in the right
part
of the cycle.
Quarantine a snail? I just have like a little critter keeper that you've got set up.
Well, I would suggest a cycled tank.
Okay.
For their safety.
Just a quarantine
health.
Tank.
Either that, it depends on the size of the snail, a lot of things. If you're going to snail, you know, you want to quarantine a couple of ram's horn snails.
Mm hmm.
And they're pretty small. You know, you could do a critter keeper and just do heavy water changes for a couple of weeks, and that would be fine. Of course, by the time you're done quarantining them, if you have more than one, you're going to have eggs in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even hatched babies in the tank by the end of those 2 weeks. So you have to be careful. And some of the less prolific snails, you didn't have to worry about it. I have to admit, I haven't always quarantined my snails. I have, on occasion, quarantined snails, but I don't always do it.
What about how,
I don't think
how
it's
long?
Quite
he's asking
as,
how long.
Well, that's a tricky.
Does it just depend on the kind of snail and what parasites
depends.
They might be carrying?
And I think it's more important, in my estimation, I think it's more important to quarantine snails that you're going to put with other snails, especially same species.
Okay.
Because they're more likely to infect a snail with something that the snail can get.
That makes sense.
Of course, putting water from a tank that has fish and snails in it from the pet store into a tank that has fish and snails in it, you're more likely to infect the fish than if you just put the snail in, you know,
right.
and discard the water it came in and things like that. But 2 weeks or so, probably fine. Some other things to watch for besides just sitting there motionless with the operculum up is any sort of reduced motion. I mean, a snail should be pretty interested in getting up and crawling around pretty fast. Not immediately necessarily, but it should happen pretty quickly. If it's there for, you know, even if it's down on the bottom and it's face down, or even if it's part way out of its shell and even moving a little bit, but it's just staying in one place,
That's not a good sign.
Another bad sign is if it's crawling around but very slowly and it doesn't have its antennae extended all the way. That can be a bad sign too.
So what do you do if that happens?
Well, when that happens, I usually suspect water quality is an issue.
I was going to say, when that happens, there's only one thing you can do.
Go through a shelf and look for
loose change.
Yeah, I generally perform a water change, see if that helps.
Okay.
And, let's see, I think it was Mick who talked about this once. He realized he had treated a tank with copper sulfate or something like that, and he put some snails in, and they looked really uncomfortable, and he put them out in a different tank, and they did fine.
They didn't like the copper?
Right. Copper is generally not very good for invertebrates at all. But it is used in some medications.
So you have to be careful with that.
It can be quite very toxic to most invertebrates. So it can even apparently remain as a residue in parts of the tank or in decor in the tank. And so you think you've gotten it all out, but
there's enough in there that it still bugs them.
Mm-hmm, like in the silicone adhesive or in driftwood or whatever can be in there. So, yeah, I would say that if you notice any lethargy on the part of the snail, and not just locking itself up, but that could be something to look for too.
Okay.
And, there's one more. If the snails are crawling out of the water, a lot. And different, there are some species that do it more than others. For example, olive nearites will sometimes just crawl out of the water and land
jump
on the
floor.
Yeah, we had that
They're
happen recently.
Naughty.
Didn't we? I'm glad you caught that. Mm-hmm. I was out of the room or something, and you found that.
Yep.
Happened, and you put them back in. Once in a while, olive nearites will do that. Some of the other snails, you know, the mystery snail group.
They like to do that too.
To lay
too?
Their eggs out of the water, and so they'll crawl up onto the cover.
The lid or something.
Yeah, the bottom of the cover, and lay their eggs there, and that's not a bad sign, but. If snails are, you see a lot of snails that are crawling up near the top in mass, it can often mean there's a water quality issue.
Is it like they're trying to get to more oxygen?
They're trying to get more oxygen, or they're just trying to get out of the whatever's in the water that's causing them pain or irritation. So those are a few things.
Those are good tips. Okay, his second question. Are glass tanks, just the tanks, not the accessories, sold in big box pet stores generally acceptable, or should I drive north to find tanks with stronger glass and better sealant? I wouldn't mind doing that if it meant I would actually get a better tank, but I'm wondering if they are, in fact, all imported from the same assembly plant.
I rather suspect that most pet stores carry the name brand tanks. That's what I've noticed.
It's all the same brands.
All glass and
both the stores.
Aquion and yeah, a few brands like that. You find the names. I can't remember what Aquion used to be. For a while, it was something else, but they changed the name. I can't remember what it is now. But anyway, I don't think it matters where you get them. Really, I mean, it's nice to have a tank custom built or whatever. But the ones that any pet store, like our local fish stores here, or whatever the big box stores, I don't think it's
you're probably going to have a bigger selection and possibly better prices at the big box store. But if you like to shop local, then it's nice to go to the locally owned stores.
Right.
So,
but in terms of
depends on
the
your
quality
priorities.
Of the tank, I don't think it matters as long as you get a good name brand tank. So
okay.
That's my.
He has a PS too. He says, "I wish I could attend the aquarium success class, but I am told it would not be a sufficient excuse to miss our family reunion in Oregon that week."
I like how he worded that. But, yeah, certainly that's a good reason to miss it. Yeah. It's coming up. It's just in another couple of weeks here.
When does it start?
13th, I think.
Oh, okay. Next week.
Is that next week?
Yeah, that's next week.
Good thing I'll be getting ready.
So if you're local and you want to come, go get registered.
Yeah,
if you're going on vacation to Utah for some bizarre reason, go get rushed.
Well, they'd have to be here for 3 weeks.
Oh, well, people come to Utah for 3 weeks all the time, right?
I don't know. Anyway, it should be fun.
Yeah, it'll be good.
Yep.
Do we have anything else that we need to talk about today?
Let me think. Wow. There's so much going on.
It looks like we're probably not going to be able to take the 100-gallon tank.
That's true.
Because I don't remember if we've talked about we have to move.
We probably do have to move, yeah.
We have to move, and it will probably be to a much smaller